The first and the foremost immediate practical step, the striking of the iron while it is hot, as they say, is to be seated in a erect posture for the purpose of the practice of yoga. The sitting posture is regarded as most conducive and necessary, because for the purpose of adjusting the mind and concentrating it on the ideal of your quest, the body also has to be set in order. And the position of the body has to be decided in the beginning. What are the positions of the body? You can be standing, you can be sitting, or you can be lying down. Now, experts in yoga have pointed out that the seated posture is the best, because while standing, the mind cannot concentrate wholly on its objective, because the standing posture requires the attention of the mind on the body to some extent. Sometimes you may not be conscious that you are standing, especially when you are engaged in some talk with a person or gazing at some sight attentively, etc. You may not be aware that you are standing. But whether you are aware or not, the mind is partly engaged in keeping the body in position in a consistent way. Is made possible on account of the cooperation of a part of the mind. You may call it reflex action, you call it subconscious action, whatever it be, a part of the mind is given to the work of enabling you to stand erect. And therefore the whole of the mind cannot be given for meditation, concentration, etc. Standing posture is no good. Otherwise, you will fall down. If you concentrate too much and get absorbed in something by standing, you will fall on account of the mind not being able to keep the body in position. If you lie down, you may go to sleep. There is a chance of getting into a state of unawareness while you are lying on bed, etc. So there is no alternative. You have to be seated in posture. The seated posture should also be a comfortable one, because the purpose of sitting is not merely sitting. The purpose is to make the mind attentive to the ideal of your quest wholly, at least in a large measure. If you are seated in a distorted position, or if you feel pain in your sitting posture, then the mind will be thinking of that pain. Suppose a person who is not used to sit in Padmasana, forces himself or herself to sit in Padmasana, there will be pain in the joints, an awkward feeling in the muscles, and your meditation will be on the muscles, pains, rather than on the object of your quest. Sthirasukhamasana, says Patanjali. Asana is neither Padmasana nor Sukhasana nor any asana. It is any posture that is very comfortable. And the comfortable posture should be such that we should not disturb the free flow of your breath. There are many things connected one with the other in our system. The muscles, the nerves, and the vital force. These are immediately connected one with the other. And indirectly they are connected with the mind. Sympathetically they exert an influence upon the mental activity. And your main purpose is to train the mind in the art of meditation. So there should be a strengthening of the position right from the beginning, as building engineers give enough attention to the laying of the foundation. For instance, the laying of the foundation of a building is a very important part of construction work. It is not something unimportant or unnecessary. So from the very beginning we have to be very cautious. It is no use taking it 100 steps at a time, not knowing the consequences thereof. You take only one step at a time. First of all, find out whether you are able to sit at all. Don't start meditating or chanting anything. Are you able to sit quietly, comfortably for a few minutes? At least for 15 minutes. For 15 minutes continuously, can you sit quietly without shaking the body? Without stretching your legs, without feeling pain in this body, without feeling any signs of unnaturalness in your pose. This has to be checked up at the very beginning. And you choose your own posture. Don't try to do something impossible. Especially Westerners, people who are not used to sit on an asana with crossed legs, with folded knees, etc., who are accustomed to sit on chair, will find it very hard to bend their knees. So for them, the advice is that they will sit in such posture as would be nearest to the prescribed postures, without causing undue pain, stress on the muscles, or any kind of awkward feeling. In the earliest of your stages, you may even stretch yourself on an easy chair with a backrest, enabling you to raise your spine to an erect position to the extent possible. Later on, it must be improved gradually until you are able to fold your knees and sit erect. Why is it said that you must fold your knees? Why not stretch your legs? Maybe a question. It is a question which is concerned with the operation of energy in the body. The purpose of locking up the legs and the hands in a seated posture is directly connected with the meditative techniques. It is not merely a whim or a fancy of people. The reason is this, that energy always is likely to leak out through the extremities of the body, through the fingers and the toes especially. The extremities of the body are the endings of the nerves, and through these endings of nerves, energy goes out, because these are the delicate parts of the system. And if they are left open, stretched forward, what would happen likely is that the energy that you conserve in an act of concentration of mind may not be able to circulate within your system, which is your intention ultimately. The energy may get out on account of the pressure exerted on the body. You know, every form of energy tries to escape the center of concentration. As you have, for example, the instance of a soda bottle. It will try to come out, if possible. But the bottle is so thick, it cannot break it easily. But the moment you open the top, it bursts out with a hissing noise. Likewise, is any kind of energy, for the matter of that. Why children jump and dance and run about here and there, while adults do not do that? You have not seen a 50-year, 60-year-old man running about. He goes very slowly, whereas a small child jumps for nothing whatsoever, no purpose. Even if you ask the child to go out and see somebody, it will run and jump and skip and go, because it has bottled up energy, whereas an adult has not so much of energy. This bottled up energy wants to escape. Energy cannot get concentrated. It must find an avenue of escape in some way or the other. So, much worse and much more is this fact becomes, does this fact become valid in a deliberate attempt at conservation of energy in concentration in meditation? The moment you begin to concentrate on anything deeply, fix your attention wholly on anything for the matter of that, all the energies of the body gets focused. At that point on which you are concentrating, there is a withdrawal of all the energy of the body. The sense function also ceases to some extent. When you are deeply concentrating on something, the eyes will not see, the ears will not hear, and so on. Even loud noises will not be heard. You may be gazing without seeing anything on account of the withdrawal of the mind. There is a focusing of all the energy at a particular point. But this is something quite unnatural for the distracted mind of the workaday world. The mind never knows what is concentration. It has never been taught the value of it, the purpose of it, or even the method of doing it. Now suddenly you are starting this technique, to which the mind is unaccustomed. So it wriggles out of this condition and wants to get out of the clutches of this act of concentration, and somehow or other finds some way or the other of stopping this method. So either you feel some sort of fatigue or awkwardness or unhappiness or tension inside, on account of which you may stop this concentration, or it will come out. Now, the way in which the energy leaks out of the system is multifarious. about which we shall see a little later on in some detail, how energy can leak out through the system. It has many ways of leaking out. But the simplest and perhaps the grossest way in which this can happen is the coming into contact of the extremities of the body with the atmosphere. You know, in the winter, wind blows very strongly, especially in these areas. That is from a place of intense pressure. The wind blows in the direction of that center where the pressure is less. That's why you have wind in the cold season here. It moves towards hot places, from cold places. Likewise, the energy may leak out of the system on account of the pressure it feels inside, and it may move in the direction of that area where the pressure is less. The pressure in the system is more, the pressure outside is less, so naturally it will go out. And it will go through the extremities, through the fingers, through the toes. So what the yogi, the student of yoga does is he locks up the fingers and the toes. The toes touch the body and are not allowed to expose themselves to the wind or the atmosphere outside. This is why you are advised to sit in a locked up posture of the legs. The best asana is supposed to be Padmasana, of course. It is supposed to be the king of meditative posture, if practicable. But if it is not practicable, you can have easier postures, as the one in which you are all seated now, for example. You are all sitting in one posture. Now, when you sit in this posture, your toes are touching the ground. You know that. You are all allowing the toes to touch the ground. If you are sitting on bare ground, of course, this is what will happen. So you are asked to be seated on a non-conductor of electricity. In ancient days, when this system of yoga was propounded, they used to sit on dry grass, a special form of grass, holy grass we have in India called darbha, kusha as they say, asanas or seats made of this grass were used. And sometimes you can also use other forms of seeds such as dry wood, not wet wood of course. But it will be very hard, so you put a cloth, a cushion like thing, and so on and so forth. The idea behind which being that you are seated on something which will not drive your energy down to the earth, because earth is a conductor of electricity. It will give a shock if you sit, you stand on the ground and touch an electric wire. The earth is the conductor of electricity, so you should not sit on it directly. Have a seat. Cotton seat is all right. And seated in this posture with the locked up legs, not allowing the toes to touch the ground, and sitting in Padmasana if possible, and locking of the hands like this, as you must have seen pictures or portraits of Buddha, for example, seated in meditation. Some people lock the fingers like this. Various postures are there. Sit erect. If you sit in a crouched position, like a hunchback, or if there is any kind of distortion of the body, you will also have a kind of distorted feeling in your mind. You will feel a sense of uneasiness. The purpose of this physical posture is to enable you gradually forget that you have got a body. The consciousness that you have a body increases by the pain that is felt in the body or any kind of illness that is in the body. A very healthy person does not know that he has a body or she has a body. It is only a sick person that always feels that there is a body. A jubilant, healthy body will not be conscious of itself. That is a sign of good health. And in yoga, the purpose ultimately is to rouse the consciousness out of attachment to the body for a different aim altogether. Now the consciousness is tied to the body. It is tied in such a vehement, impetuous way that it is almost unthinkable how you can extricate it out of it. The consciousness or the mind has become one with the body. It is the body for all practical purposes. You and the body are one. You are the body. This is what has happened to us. But this is a very unfortunate state of affairs, that we have regarded our body itself as ourself. And there is nothing else that we can think of as being ourselves. It is very difficult to unloosen the contact of consciousness with the body. It is a Herculean task. No one should think that it is so simple a matter as one can imagine. It will not come out like that. It is like peeling a skin of your body. Who will like to peel the skin? It is all horrible. But this is exactly what will happen. When you try to extricate your mind or consciousness from the body, even a little, you will feel a shock. You will feel a creeping sensation, like ants crawling in your nerves, through your nerves. And there is a tremor, perspiration, and some such awkward sensation. This you will feel even when you are merely sitting for a long time, without any concentration, without thinking anything in the mind. You try this and see what happens. For 1 hour continuously, sit in one erect posture without even thinking anything. Don't meditate. Don't do japa. Only sit. You will find a creeping sensation, a subtle feeling inside that some sort of wavy motion is going on inside the nervous system. That is, the sensation created by the movement of the prana. The purpose is very clear. There is no need to expatiate upon this point. So you be seated in one posture. It is advised by teachers of yoga that you must face the eastern direction or the north, because of the magnetic influence of these directions for different reasons. The sunrise is the cause of a magnetic force in the eastern direction. And the North Pole is supposed to be the center of magnetic force, which runs from North to South. So these two directions are regarded as very helpful in generating psychic electricity within us in the act of meditation or concentration. Face the east or the north. Be seated in one posture with head, neck and spine erect. Now this keeping of the head, neck and spine erect is difficult in the beginning. You will feel pain in the spine. So in the earliest of stages you have a backrest. As I am having something here, you have a cushion. Or sit near a wall which is perpendicular to the ground. That will help you in the beginning to keep yourself erect. Whatever be helpful to you in this practice, you can resort to. Now having seated yourself in this posture comfortably, what follows? What are you going to do by sitting like this? Here starts the real investigative activity, which is the beginning of yoga. Your mind starts working and it starts working in a very comprehensive manner. Many have suggested that before you actually start thinking on any particular issue of yoga, it is better that you take a deep breath. Many types of pranayama are prescribed, but we need not go into all these details of the technical pranayamas, because they have also one purpose ultimately, to harmonize the flow of the breath. Just as all the asanas or the physical exercises Hatha Yoga prescribes have one purpose ultimately, to keep the body in a perfect position, a single chosen position. The purpose of the different breathing exercises also is finally to systematize the process of breathing. Instead of breathing heavily or heaving a heavy breath as we do when we are running, when we are exhausted, etc. The more you are composed, the slower is the process of your breathing. It is only in a disturbed condition that you heave heavy breaths. Either you are in ecstatic joy or you are in great grief. So when you are seated in a posture, the best thing would be to take a very slow, deep breath and exhale slowly as possible. This continued for a few minutes, coupled with Om chanting in a sonorous, mild tone will prepare the mind for its further work. But you will find that you can neither take a deep breath very slowly nor chant Om with peace. Your mind is disturbed for any reason. This is another essential factor. If you are agitated for some reason or the other, you should not sit for meditation. That is not the time for sitting. Every one of us has an occasion or several occasions to get disturbed in mind. Something happens, either within us or outside us, which puts us out of gear and we are not happy. We are morose and moody and don't know what to do. At that time, there is no use sitting in a posture or breathing. It is not good. That is why there is the very cautious advice given already that you must be adequately established in the practice of yamas. Because there is no practice of yama, this disturbance comes. Why are you moody and melancholy and dejected? What is the matter with you? Something is wrong in your way of thinking. You have not been able to adjust yourself properly with society or with your desires and so on and so forth. These all come under yamas. You have not laid the foundation properly and now you are sitting for asana. No, you are not ready for asana itself. Well, this is a very important thing to remember. Are you agitated? Frustrated? This is a question you must put. Also, it is proper or advisable to review in one's mind if there is any deep attachment to anything in the mind. Something which compels us to pay some attention to it. Mild attachments do not matter. There may be many like that. But is there any deep-rooted attachment which is inseparable from your normal emotional feeling? Some attachment or the other everyone has. And if there is something very severe and inescapable, that has to be dealt with in an effective manner. What prevents us from concentrating the mind on things spiritual is attachment to something or the other in this world. And what is attachment? It is nothing but the concentration of the mind on something. And now we are here only to concentrate the mind on something. That is the very purpose of yoga. But what is it that you are concentrating upon or trying to concentrate upon? You have got some peculiar idealistic notion of what you have to meditate or concentrate upon, for which you are now sitting in the name of yoga. But the mind has already concentrated itself on something else, different from what you are now idealistically conceiving as the object of your concentration. So there is a tussle between an idealistic picture that has been placed before the mind in the name of yoga and a realistic attachment with which it is very much concerned. Now, this is a very serious matter for the students of yoga, for people who live a spiritual life. And this is so serious that we cannot simply close our eyes to it. Because if deep-rooted attachments are not dealt with in a proper way, and without paying the requisite attention to them, you force your will to concentrate on something else in the name of yoga, it will be harmful to your system. it will violate your personality, insult your mind, and cause various thoughts of complexes and illnesses, physical as well as mental. Therefore, after you are seated well, review in your mind if you have any strong emotions inside, either of intense affection or intense resentment. Either of these are dangerous. If you find that it is hopeless, the mind is so much agitated on account of this attachment or resentment that it is no good sitting for meditation, well, you close your meditation for the time being. My dear friend, enough for this day. Today I am not going to meditate. I am very much upset. Then what to do now? Then again comes the need for a psychological analysis. A deeply upset person cannot do any psychological analysis. You must do this analysis with the guidance of a superior. If you have not got a guru, at least somebody who is better than you. He is not my guru, but again I said consult. Something very serious is wrong with me. What can I do? He may give something. Two heads are better than one head, they say. So some such collaboration from your co-brothers on the path, if you do not have a guru, of course, it will be helpful. Otherwise, you yourself cannot analyze yourself when you are completely out of order due to deep attachments or wrath in the mind, etc. The love of God is a death blow to all your earthly emotions. And death blow is the severest of blows. Nobody can tolerate it. It is painful and awfully painful. You cannot bear it. The love of God, though you use the word love like a honeyed term, it is a terrific thing. Here is an occasion, here is an instance where love, which ordinarily is a source of joy, becomes a source of sorrow and repulsion and painful as if it is venom. The love of God is not at the outset a source of joy. It is an axe that you deal at the root of all your joys. This is the reason why most of us cannot take to a serious practice of meditation and a daily renewal of the mind, a constant assessment of the conditions of the mind, a regular checking up of what is happening or going on in the mind, even in a subtle, invisible manner, would be necessary before taking to actual practice of pratyahara or dharana. Hari Om Tassa.